This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm Penny Nelson. State fire investigators are blaming PG&E equipment for 12 of the deadly fires that broke out across Northern California last October. These fires were among dozens that killed 44 people and destroyed thousands of homes. As KQED's Marisa Lagos reports, the findings raise questions about who will pay for the devastating blazes.
CAL FIRE still hasn't said what caused the deadliest fire last October, the Sonoma County Tubbs fire that leveled a Santa Rosa subdivision. But late Friday, CAL FIRE released its findings into a dozen other blazes in six counties, finding that in nearly every case, PG&E power lines, conductors, and other equipment started the fires. CAL FIRE says in eight of those cases, including the Atlas Peak fire in Napa County that killed six people, PG&E negligence may be to blame. CAL FIRE is referring those investigations to local prosecutors. Mark Toney, executive director of the consumer advocacy group TURN, says those findings mean the utility should not be able to shift costs for the fires to its customers.
PG&E is responsible for the majority of the fires through the negligence of their tree trimming, vegetation management, power line management. As far as TURN is concerned, that means that PG&E shareholders should be responsible for paying for the damage caused.
But in a statement, PG&E said it followed laws and regulations and blamed climate change and extreme weather. The utility is pushing for changes to state law to make it harder to hold the company liable for property damage it causes. For the California Report, I'm Marisa Lagos.
And a new internal report released by Sonoma County officials this weekend says the county's emergency employees were unprepared to handle these wildfires. KQED's Sonia Hudson reports.
The long-awaited internal review finds the county's Emergency Operations Center is not equipped to deal with large and complex disasters. It says during the October wildfires, the Emergency Operations Center did not have enough trained staff, information about the fires wasn't gathered or distributed quickly enough, and communication between local and regional officials was insufficient. The review calls, broadly, for major revisions to plans and policies, increased training for county staff, a new Emergency Operations Center facility, and new positions to better coordinate response to a disaster.
That was KQED's Sonia Hudson. Moving now to immigration, attorneys say a fast-track prosecution program for those crossing the border illegally is coming to San Diego's district courts. The program, known as Operation Streamline, is part of the Trump administration's call for increased prosecutions, and it's already used in Texas. It includes first-time offenders and is meant to handle their cases in large groups. KPBS Fronteras reporter Jean Guerrero has the story.
Some criminal defense attorneys have questions about what Operation Streamline means for the due process rights of immigrants who enter without inspections. Attorney Jeremy Warren sat on a committee convened by the chief judge for the Southern District to look at how to deal with the substantial increase called for in prosecution of illegal entry cases. The U.S. Department of Justice advised the court that it would like at least 100 misdemeanor cases, that's how first-time illegal entry is charged, to move through the court per week. Warren says the mass prosecutions could violate constitutional rights. Many of these immigrants need translators. In addition, he says targeting people for first-time illegal entry could let more serious criminals off the hook.
And in this district, we do a lot of serious fraud cases, cartel cases. All sorts of major investigations go on here. And resources are being diverted to prosecuting the guy who was coming up here to pick tomatoes. And we're not so sure that that's the best use of resources.
The Office of the U.S. Attorney here declined to comment on Operation Streamline, saying only that it's looking for practical solutions to Trump's zero-tolerance policy. According to Warren, mass prosecutions could begin within 3 to 4 weeks. For the California Report, I'm Jean Guerrero in San Diego.
Meanwhile, Immigration and Customs Enforcement announced plans to use more than 1,600 federal prison beds to detain immigrants. Detainees would be sent to Victorville in San Bernardino County. KPCC's Libby Denkman was outside the prison where the first wave of detainees arrived on Friday.
They came by the busload to this prison complex in the southwest corner of the Mojave Desert. This prison houses about 3,700 inmates. It's split between one maximum security facility, two medium security prisons, and one minimum security camp. The prison is prepping to accept as many as 1,000 immigrant detainees. To make space, some inmates in medium security were moved to another part of the prison. Derek Lowe is an attorney with the nonprofit Immigrant Defenders Law Center. He says these immigrants don't belong here.
This facility, this prison, was designed to house criminals, convicted criminals. By contrast, immigrant detainees are in civil proceedings, something that the immigration courts like to remind us of continuously.
Lowe says federal prisons aren't set up for the legal resources or even family visitations that immigrants prepping to go before a judge need. The union, representing hundreds of prison guards, says it got 48 hours notice of the new arrivals. The group had already complained about being understaffed, says Vice President John Zumker.
So that was a big surprise that they were going to give us 1,000 new people and not give us one new staff member.
ICE says the agency needs the beds in federal prisons because of a surge in border crossings and the Justice Department's policy of arresting everyone with an immigration violation. The Bureau of Prisons says it's been asked to detain the immigrants for 120 days, but the agreement is flexible, up to 12 months. For the California Report, I'm Libby Denkman in Victorville.
We head down to the Central Coast now, where the Monterey County Sheriff's Office is trying to figure out why thousands of illegal opium poppies were growing around Moss Landing and where those poppies are headed. KAZU's Erica Mahoney reports.
In an unmarked Monterey County Sheriff's car, Commander John Thornburg drives to an opium poppy field. Deputies discovered it last month. This area is mostly farmland, and the commander has a hard time finding it.
All of them seem to have been planted in areas with high growth. That's not it. And maybe that's why some people have described it as hiding in plain sight, which people are not wrong.
Down a dirt road that's just big enough for the car, he pulls up to a barren field. A few dead opium poppy plants stand upright in the corner.
And this is where we discovered it.
He pulls one of the dried plants out of the soil.
Now, this is obviously a dead version of the plant that we had, that we found. The ones we found were very much alive and very much growing and very much being taken care of.
In bloom, opium poppies are a vibrant purple, pink, or red color. He holds a dry brown bulb in his hand.
The bulb here is the main part of the plant and is the main part of the issue. Because what they'll do, this, it won't work on a dried one, obviously, but they would take a razor blade or a very sharp knife and make slits in here. And they actually have cups that they put on the bottom to catch the liquid that oozes out so they can capture it.
The liquid can be processed into heroin. Thornburg says this roughly 1 acre field could produce over a pound of heroin, valued at around $45,000.
That's a lot of heroin. That's a lot of heroin.
But this field was the tip of the iceberg. After news of it broke, tips about other opium poppy fields flooded in. At this point, the Monterey County Sheriff's Office has discovered 8 fields. In total, that's 5.6 acres of opium poppy plants. The Sheriff's Office got search warrants to tear out the fields. There were so many plants to destroy, they called in help from the National Guard. The Sheriff's Office knows who planted them. They're investigating 10 farmers who leased the land. The farmers all work in the cut flower industry. Monterey County Sheriff Detective Mike Smith is the lead investigator on this case. He says growing opium poppy plants is against state and federal law.
When I interviewed them, most seemed to be oblivious to the fact that the opium poppy plant was illegal.
According to Smith, the farmers say they were planning to sell the poppies as ornamental flowers. So investigators are trying to figure out who planned to buy these poppies and what the buyers intended to do with them.
I mean, the reality is we got 5.6 acres, so there's a question in everybody's mind as to how many flower bouquets you can make out of 5.6 acres of opium poppies. So where is it actually going?
For now, no arrests have been made. For the California Report, I'm Erica Mahoney.
Californians understand probably better than most that access to safe, clean water is not always a given. Senator Kamala Harris just introduced legislation, the Water Affordability Act, setting up a pilot program to help low-income people pay for water and sewage bills that seem to be continually on the rise. Monica Pham wrote the legislation and joins us now. So, Monica, tell us, if you would, how the program will work.
Well, the Water Affordability amends the Clean Water Act, and it directs the EPA to create a pilot program that would award grants to help low-income households pay their water bills.
And how does it amend the Clean Water Act?
Well, specifically, it asks for eligibility for assistance that takes into account environmental risk factors as well as inequitable environmental burdens as part of the criteria when looking at the grant program.
So if people lived in a highly polluted area or an industrial area, that might be a community where there's a high risk factor, or if people have particularly low income situations, they would be eligible. So those two factors would come into play.
That's correct. And also part of the eligibility, states can adopt a lower income limit if they want to, but no household with an income below 110% of the poverty guideline can be considered ineligible.
In looking at the legislation, Los Angeles, it says, has seen its water costs go up by 71% in the past decade, and San Francisco has seen its water costs go up by 127%. And I'm wondering why.
Well, one of the issues that we have is the California's been in a drought, but also because of the rising costs for water infrastructure. And that has to do with sewers, that has to do with dams, spillways, pipelines, but it's also an environmental justice issue. And California has been experiencing a water affordability crisis, and low-income families continue to struggle to pay their bills. This is a burden that no family, especially ones in California, should have to face.
And what's the timeline for Senator Harris's legislation?
So she's continuing to build support for the bill with her colleagues, but we've also seen a number of environmental groups throw their support behind it, including Earth Justice, the Association for California Water Agencies, the Clean Water for All Coalition, and the San Francisco PUC.
All right. Well, Monica Pham, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Monica Pham is legislative counsel in the office of Senator Kamala Harris. And in case you've been at a meditation retreat or, say, on a science expedition in the far north, the Golden State Warriors are the NBA champs once again. The Dubs wiped out the Cleveland Cavaliers Friday night, 108-85. And for the thousands of fans watching the game at Oakland's Oracle Arena, it was a sweet, sweet victory. Among them was San Jose native James Perez. He says he's been a lifelong fan of the Warriors before all-stars like Steph Curry and Kevin Durant were on the team.
I used to come to the games when it was like you could buy four tickets, four hot dogs, four sodas for $50. And basically, we weren't that good at that time, so you could sit anywhere you wanted. But that's why it makes it so much better to be a Dub fan now.
So much better indeed. The city of Oakland is planning to honor the Warriors with a parade tomorrow, and close to a million fans are expected to join the celebration.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. Artist Works. Bluegrass players can learn from internationally recognized artists Tony Trischka, Mike Marshall, and Brian Sutton, and more at artistworks.com/bluegrass. And the James Irvine Foundation, expanding economic and political opportunity for Californians who are working but struggling with poverty. More at irvine.org.
And that's the California Report podcast for Monday, June 11th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Penny Nelson. Have a great day.